If you want to be absolutely incredibly inspired by temple work and the ease and the ability to get involved in some form of family history work one way or another, and if you want to just be amazed with what God is doing for us today, then you need to listen to this episode. There are things that will just blow your away, numbers you haven't even thought of. It is so cool. It's so amazing. You've got to join us for this episode. And then we hope you'll join us at tsar.website, where I will explain more in detail using President Ballard's teachings about the background that brought us the beautiful revelation we call Section 138. We love our audience, and we love doing what we do with you and helping you. And we have such big plans for our Old Testament year. We want to help all of you and keep bring in even more people and do as much as we can to help people understand the Old Testament year. To do that, we are trying to expand what we're doing and give you more things, but we could use your help. We hope you'll consider us for your Giving Tuesday donation or your year-end donations, whatever that looks like. We can accept things as a DAF. We are a 501c3, so this is a tax-deductible contribution. We can accept all sorts of payments. You can Venmo, you can use Zelle, you can write checks. All of the information you need for that will be on outofthedust.org. That's outofthedust.org. And we really hope you'll consider giving us whatever you can afford. If that's $5, if that's $5,000, whatever works, we would be so happy to have you help us continue to do great things. So go to outofthedust.org and get details on how you can provide help for many. Right now, we're even reaching Brazil and Latin America because YouTube's automatically translating it. So please help more people understand the Old Testament. Thank you. Hello, and welcome to the Scriptures Are Real podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about elements of the Scriptures that have become real to us because we think that helps us draw more power out of them, and we need all the help we can get. I'm your host, Kerry Muehlstein, and I'm so happy to have a new guest with us today that I'm just getting to know, but this is Dr. Joseph Price. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Kerry. I'm great to be here.
I'm glad you've come. Highly recommended to us, and so we're so glad you'd share time with us. I know you teach, you're a professor of economics, or econ, at Brigham Young University. We've just been talking about your graduate work at Cornell University, which is a university I love, and I love their press, and just a fantastic little part of New York. But tell us more about yourself.
Sure. My wife, Emily, and I have seven kids. Right. We're serving together as a YSA bishop.
Oh, so you are plenty busy.
Yeah, it's been a neat experience to kind of see the church through that kind of blessing of the YSA experience. Yeah. And then I direct a large research lab at BYU called the Record Linking Lab. It has about 35 BYU students. We work with hundreds of pathway students and thousands of volunteers.
And that's part of what has brought you here to talk with us today. So that's great. Well, thank you for being with us. That's a whole lot of busyness. So we're glad you'd make time for us. And I believe that our audience will be blessed by you, and then they'll go bless other people.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's jump in today. It's hard to believe we're in the final sections of the Doctrine and Covenants. We still have official declaration number two, all of them, the official declarations and the proclamation on the family. We'll be talking about, I'm just letting my audience know, we're going to be interviewing the first missionary to serve that was of African descent as we talk about official declaration two, and it's a fantastic interview, really moving to me. And Janet Erickson will talk to us about the proclamation on the family. So I'm excited about those. But here we are. It is hard to believe we're at the end of the sections of the Doctrine and Covenants, yeah. And they are profound sections. We've spent several already where Joseph has been teaching about a doctrine of doing salvation for the dead. One of these. It recounts something that had happened long before. One of these is long after Joseph Smith, but they focus on this fantastic, fantastic work. And it's more than we can cover. So what would you like to talk about?
Well, I think let's start with DNC 137.
All right.
And I think if I were to say, what's the message of DNC 137? It's that God's plan will include everyone. Mm. And, a lot of us wonder, will so-and-so be in heaven? Right. I mean, I grew up with four grandparents that none of them were active in the church and they smoke and drank. And so you know, you wonder, like, how's heaven going to work? Will it include people who maybe knew about the gospel, maybe even made covenants, but didn't keep them? Like, how does that work? And, you know, obviously Joseph was thinking about Alvin as part of this. And so I think what this scripture, what I love about this is there's kind of four verses, four parts to it. So if you look at verse five.
Well, is it right if I just quickly give a little background on this to remind our audience? So this happens at the first time. It's back in 1836, January of 1836. They've just finished working on the Book of Abraham, and they've had this year where they've been learning about priesthood authority in so many ways. And then they do the first temple ordinances. It's washings and anointings. And they're in the upper room of the temple, which was kind of Joseph's office. And after doing these ordinances, he has this vision. It won't get put into Doctrine and Covenants until later, but this is January of 1836, months before they get the keys, but God is preparing them for that, it would seem. And so this is a fantastic temple experience. And I find it fascinating. He's going to see his father in this vision. His father's sitting right next to him.
I know, isn't it crazy? Right?
I mean, I don't know exactly what it would be like to be Joseph Sr. and to hear Joseph saying, oh, I see Dad. Anyway, great experience. Anyway, sorry.
I think what you said about his father is amazing, is that like he sees his father and his mother there, and they're both still alive.
Yes.
So I think that's like key point number one. And then second, he's saying those that would have accepted the gospel but didn't get to, they're there.
Yeah.
And then he says, and everyone in the future that, you know, would have received the gospel, but don't get to, they're there. And then, you know, he finally says, and actually everyone who dies before the age of accountability, they're also there.
Yeah.
So I just think of that as like a very inclusive view of heaven.
So expansive.
Yeah. So expansive. And, and then in fact, DNC 138 is going to make it even bigger, because then even those that heard the gospel and rejected the prophets, they're getting another chance. They're being taught. And So I don't know, when I was a BYU student, I read this book by Stephen Robinson called Believing Christ, and I watched his devotional, and it changed me in so many ways. Like, here's just one quote from it that always impacted me. He said, "We need to know that in the covenant relationship we have with the Savior, if we should die tomorrow, we have hope of the celestial kingdom." Yeah. And so that's why I love the fact that his father's included and there with him. It's like, Dad, this is where you're headed. And so I've always felt like, I think like before reading Believing Christ, I kind of had this vision that like you work really hard your whole life so that somehow at the end of your life, you can like try out for the team. Or you're outside the house, like hoping that, you know, one day you get to come inside the house. And I think what Believing Christ helped me was to realize that, no, I was already on the team. Yeah. And I think Brad Wilcox made it even more clear, where it was like, I wasn't trying to earn heaven. I was trying to learn heaven. I was trying to practice it. And so that's what one thing I love about this is just how inclusive it is.
I agree. And I mean, to set it in a little bit of a historical context, remember a lot of Americans at that time are of a Calvinist leaning. His mother and many of his siblings had been, right? And they have this belief that very few people are going to be saved. Yeah. This is where we get, you know, sinners in the hands of an angry God and predestination. And God has chosen a few people and those few will be saved. So many are believing that this is so completely different from that belief.
For sure. Yeah. And so I just love that message. And one of the blessings of family history is, you know, I've come to realize that my grandparents are, you know, they're with God, and we'll be with them too. And so, you know, I think it's just hard to know like what people's circumstances are while they're in life. Like, why did someone choose to smoke or drink?
Yes.
We don't know. Like, people have different strengths and weaknesses. And so it's just neat that, you know, God's grace can just, I think Robert Millet calls it the tentacles of grace that just keep like reaching out and pulling people in. So I really love that.
I do too. That's beautiful. You know, I've worked sometimes with people who have gone through serious trauma, and we know about the changes to their brain, right? And they just keep making choices that, you know, it's because of these weird things happening because of the trauma. And I just can't help but feel that God, when he heals that, everything that's going on, that they would make different choices if they hadn't had all these things happen to them, and that God's going to give them a chance to make those choices once those things are removed from them.
Yeah, that's cool. And another verse in 137 I like is in verse 9. It says, "For I, the Lord, will judge all men according to their works." And this comma is kind of interesting. There's just this comma, and then it says, "according to the desires of their hearts." Because I would have thought there would have been an and there. You know, I'm going to judge them based on their works, and, or I'm going to judge them on their works, or, you know, this comma. It's, it seems that the two things kind of are working together or represent the same thing.
Yeah. That somehow the works are not mitigated, is not the right word, but filtered through what their desires
exactly. Were. Yeah. And so, you know, both as a parent and as a YSA bishop, I'm always, you know, it's like easy to get focused on the behaviors. Like, I really want my YSA kids to come to church, right?
Yeah.
I really want my kids to go on a mission or go to the temple. And what I've learned is actually the most important thing I want is I want them to desire the gospel. I want them to desire a relationship with Jesus Christ. Like, you know, we had a recent devotional about this. Like, what desirest thou? I'd love for their greatest desire to be the good news of the gospel. And and it feels like if they desire it, then it the behavior will come naturally.
Yeah. Sooner or later. It may be take a while because of different things they've gone through or misunderstandings that they have or whatever. But sooner or later, that desire will guide them to the right channel.
Yeah. And that's where, for family history, for me, it's really interesting because I basically didn't do family history my whole life. I basically went from like apathy. And it's like weird because I don't even remember like feeling, I never felt guilty about it. I just didn't do it. And then I was probably 35, 36 when I went to a BYU education class about family history, and it just came into my heart. And I just remember that seed of desire getting planted. And my initial goal was just to find a name that I could take to the temple. And I spent maybe 20 hours trying.
It used to be a lot harder.
And especially since my middle name is Pratt. So I was like working on the Pratt line, which was a very picked over part of the tree. And so I remember like, it was about 20 hours in and I was just like, oh, I guess there's no one left for me to do temple work for on my tree. And then I found this one person and I went right away to the Provo Temple and I did all their ordinances just in one day. Moving from
fantastic.
And I would recommend to anyone that hasn't had that experience just to, you know, go do the baptism and confirmation, go do the initiatory, go do the endowment, sealing to parents, all kind of in one. Yeah. It's really neat to kind of see that journey, but it just changed my heart. And after that, I just fell in love with family history and I continued to do it. But I've always wondered like, what would have happened if I hadn't found that name? Like, would I have just been like, oh, I guess there's nothing to do. And so one of the goals of our lab has always been to try to make it a little easier so that maybe that success, whatever it is you're wanting to do, can happen a little bit quicker. And then for me, the biggest blessing was that desire for family history actually replaced a different desire, which is I used to play video games a lot. And even as like a BYU professor, I would sometimes play video games until 4 a.m, which is insane. I reflect back on that and just, I'm just like, with as busy as I am now, I'm like, how did I possibly like think that was going to work well? And the moment I started doing family history, it just, that desire for video games disappeared. And I've been super grateful for that.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now I interrupted you early on and I'm sorry. I hope I didn't, by bringing in Alvin or something, didn't ruin where you're trying to go, but, happy to talk about those verses or wherever you want to go.
I think what I was just drawn by in that verse was just that idea of desire and how the works. I mean, there's so many things that like are on our checklist or feel that like they should be on our checklist.
Yeah.
But I feel like once you love Jesus, it's everything's different.
Yeah.
And so that's the desire that I think like ultimately, like, you know, it's saying God will be judged based on our works, which is the desire of our hearts. And I just think like heaven's going to be a place where if we love Jesus, we're going to love heaven. And
yeah, that's fantastic. And it's that, I'd agree with you, like that love leads to consecration, right? Yeah. And then you just have this thing like, oh, that's a calling. That's coming my way. I don't know that I'm very good at that, but I guess God can make me good at that if that's what he wants. And you're just happy to do whatever it is he wants. And you just trust he's going to make this work. But really there's just a joy in doing whatever it is he's asking you to do next. And you're like, oh, that's not what the plans were, but I don't know why I was making plans anyway. Let's just go forward.
So, yeah. And sometimes if we do it the other way around, like if we focus so much on how do I get my YSAs to go to church without thinking about the desire part, we might have, you know, people in seats, but we'd really love them to like have a good experience and to want to be there. And actually there's something neat. Now, granted, I think a lot of times, you know, as we do things, we can acquire preferences and our hearts can change through the actions, but
acquire desire. Yeah. That's a good phrase we can use. Yeah.
Moving those together. Yeah.
And it reminds me, I can't think of who, but we had that talk a while ago about like figure out your why. I think that's part of what you're hitting at here.
Absolutely.
Like we need to understand why we're doing this.
Yeah. With family history, it's really interesting to ask people like, why do you do it? And I think with the rising generation, with the youth and young adults, one of the most exciting whys right now is the family tree is growing so fast. And in fact, one of the things we focused on is growing the family tree for groups that have been historically overlooked.
Mm.
So, you know, you'll be having your podcast with the first missionary in Africa and actually here in the United States.
Well, he was in Brazil, but he's of African descent.
Oh, African descent. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, historically, African Americans in the United States have been overlooked by the tree. Like they had kind of lower representation on the tree.
Yeah.
And to know that, like, young adults today can actually go on Family Search and grow the tree for Brazil or for other countries so that when someone in that country goes to the family tree, they find their family. That's like a different motivation. I guess what I've learned through all this is we can love people that we're not related to. And so that why becomes the why doing family history, it just opens up a lot of neat possibilities of like why we would want to do family history.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And I guess one other thing in 137 is this idea that infants who die go to the celestial kingdom.
Yeah.
Especially since Joseph and Emma lost, you know, four of their own kids. And actually we're doing a lot of work in Chile right now. And about one third of the children born in Chile historically died. You know, in that first year of life or first couple years of life.
Yeah.
And this has been true. I mean, that's just the stat for Chile. But if you look globally, like it's always been really hard to have children and many children and mothers died in childbirth. And so this is like a really expansive doctrine. I mean, otherwise, at least these crazy things where they're like, they're trying to get the priest over really quick so they can baptize. Like that's that's the worst moment to have to think about that existential issue when you're just, you're dealing with a medical issue in the moment and you're grieving and ours is just like inclusive.
It's incredible. Like historically, and I deal with, you know, I excavate burials. I know about infant and child mortality rate from that and so on. We're looking at, you're a pretty lucky, healthy society if you've got a 30% child and infant mortality rate. I mean, that's historically, that's what it is. And that's, I mean, you think about that. A third of everyone that's being born, according to many doctrines, are not going to be saved. I can't imagine a God that's okay with that, right? And that's just hard for me to imagine. And yet, that's where we are for most belief systems. I am so grateful to have this that tells us, no, I have taken care of that.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the kind of God that I feel his love for all his children from.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I think you get in both these sections is just this God that's doing so much. And it's like built into the plan. Like that's what's amazing is like vicarious baptism is actually the modal form of baptism in God's plan. And that it was there. I think Amy Harris has this great book called Renaming the Dead. And I think like she has this part where she's like, you know, baptisms for the dead is not like a fix it for some theological problem.
Yeah.
It was actually a precondition for the earth's creation. Cause God, I mean, that was what must've been really interesting to be in the pre-earth life and have God tell us, hey, look, let me tell you how earth's going to be.
Yeah.
Like most of you are not going to, get to hear the gospel. And one of the things that struck me in DNC 138 is it said, even for people who lived in the time of Jesus Christ, near Jesus Christ, he said, few of them accepted. So, you know, God had to have made it. I mean, he had to have made this inclusiveness right from the beginning and know that vicarious baptism was going to be the modal form of.
Explain what you mean by modal form.
Or like the most common, so if you were to take all of God's, you know, 100 billion children, like if you think about how many of them actually got to be baptized as a living ordinance here on earth with proper priesthood authority. It's like such a tiny sliver.
Yeah.
And so when you read in D&C 138 about what the missionaries teach, they teach faith, repentance, and then it says vicarious baptism, which is actually like, you know, here on earth, we obviously teach about baptism, the living ordinance, but actually the modal or the most common way that people are going to receive the ordinance of baptism is going to be through the work we do in the temple.
And that's incredible. And I have to agree, you know, I don't think I'd really thought of it that way before. You're helping me see this. Mm-hmm. That should have been obvious to me all along, but really just like as members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we don't think that the fall was a surprise and this isn't how it was supposed to happen. Oh, quick, what can we do to fix? Oh, let's send Christ, right? That's not the plan. Christ was not the plan B. Yeah. From the beginning, God said, this will involve this fall, separation and mortal and spiritual death, and Christ will come to save that. I think you're right that just like that, he has to also have said, most people are not going to have the chance to be baptized and come into Christ through baptism in this life. But the plan is that we will work to help each other receive that vicariously. You're absolutely right. It has to have been the plan from the beginning. Baptism is for the dead. It's not plan B any more than Christ coming is plan
exactly. B. I think the way you phrase it is exactly the way to think about it. And so, and then the one thing, and this might be great for listeners to think about, is actually one of the things I love most in doing family history is when I find a missing child.
Mm.
And this often will happen if you're working with a census record or when you're looking at a birth certificate and you'll find out who the parents are and you'll go to the tree and you'll realize that this person in this birth certificate is not there.
Oh.
And so you're like reuniting a child with their family.
That is tender.
And it's really special. And I, you know, a lot of parents can think of times where they've lost one of their children.
Yeah.
And like how happy you feel when you find them. I mean, we lost one of our, we were camping in Idaho with our 7 kids and we were like 2 hours on our way back to Utah when we realized the car was missing one. So, and I just remember how joyful it was when we found him. And then the other part of this is I think it's super important for us when we look on our family tree to look for people that don't have a death date.
Mm.
Because actually, if we can find that death date, we'll often discover that many of those children died when they were 1 or 2. Yeah. And why would that be important? It means that actually we can right away do the sealing to parent.
Oh yeah.
So if you think about that person wanting to be sealed to their parents, if we don't put in that death date, then we're going to do their baptism, all these ordinances and then the sealing to parent. But once we put in that death date, we know which ordinances they need. And so we can kind of hasten, we can accelerate that sealing.
Oh, because I hadn't thought this through, but I think you're telling me that if someone dies at age 1,
yep.
We don't have to do baptisms for them.
No, none of the ordinances except for the sealing to parent.
That makes sense because of what we just read in section 137.
Exactly. Yeah, because they're already in the celestial kingdom, but they haven't been sealed with their parents. So, I mean, these are kind of like, I mean, we think about the celestial kingdom as an individual thing, which absolutely is, but then you, as you get into 138 and you talk about kind of the sealing, you realize that actually these children want to be sealed to their parents and otherwise they're going to have to wait, you know, for however long it takes for those other things to happen. So I mean, one thing I just encourage listeners is just go on the tree and look for people that don't have death information. And it's usually easy to find. Just, you know, look for a death certificate or a cemetery record or something. Hmm. So
that's fantastic. So I have to just personalize this a little bit. We try and make these real. I'll tell you that one of the most difficult things for me in my excavation is finding a child, and it happens right? Yeah. I can still remember the first season that we were excavating where I was the director, and one of the first burials we found was a little girl, we could tell about age 5, who had been so carefully prepared and little bracelets on and things like that. And I had a 5-year-old girl and it was hard because I thought about her parents and how I know I would feel if I lost my 5-year-old girl. And how they would feel. And then I would think about, well, I'm only sealed to my daughter.
Yeah.
This little girl, like, I doubt that we have records going back to, burial is probably about 400 AD. Mm-hmm. And I mean, at some point we'll get to that little girl, but right now she's not sealed to her parents and how terrible that must feel to her and her parents. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I love what you're talking about. Let's find these people and help them be sealed to their family.
For sure. Yeah.
Wonderful. So how do you do that? I mean, tell us about this lab.
So the Record Linking Lab is a research lab that does basically three things. We try to grow the family tree, and we do that through some automation. And we also create, tools that make it easier for people to participate in the expansion of the family tree. We also focus on trying to get more people involved in family history. So we've been trying to ask questions like, you know, how young could someone be and still contribute? Mm. How disabled could someone be and still contribute? Mm. Like, where in the world do we have people not participating in family history, but they could? I mean, one of the neatest moments was when we started working with about 200 pathway students in Africa and we gave them work. So we're giving them a job so they could pay for their, their expenses. And, we're giving them family history tasks and they were so good at it and they were so grateful for the work and they worked so hard and it made the numbers for Africa just go off the chart. And so there was like this unique moment where, someone at Family Search was like, can you give us the list so we can take them out of the statistics? They're like, they're hurting the statistics. They're making
we can't figure out what the norm is because these guys are
they're doing
the curve.
So much. And I was like, but I'm like, but they're in Africa. And they're like, well, they're not really in Africa. I'm like, no, they're like, they're really in Africa. And it was like, they were untapped potential. Like they'd been there the whole time. And anyone could have tapped into that potential. And so that's what I'm always trying to think of. Like, oh, we have people in prison. Could they help with the gathering? Oh, we have homeless people. Could they help with the gathering? Oh, we have children with Down syndrome who maybe, maybe struggle to do normal indexing. Could we create a form of indexing that they could do? So it's all about like how to make the work go faster, but also how to make everyone be able to play a part.
All right. So I want to talk to you afterwards. I know someone in prison that would probably love to be involved in this. I'd love to figure out how to help with that. But what a great thing to think about. That's an incredible untapped potential that would be healing for them.
Healing for them.
To be doing this good work. That's a fantastic thing. So I just want to know more. I mean, the automation, everything else. Tell us more.
Well, so I mean, the real secret sauce is the BYU students. So I've had hundreds of BYU students work in the lab and they are so talented that, I get them from computer science or applied math or economics or statistics or IS, and they come in and once they capture the vision that we could accelerate the gathering of Israel, they come up with amazing things. So, I mean, one student I'll highlight is Kevin Richens. He worked for me. He came to me as a freshman. I had him for 4 years in my lab. He's probably added more people to the family tree than anyone in human history. Mm. And he's he built some software for us that we've continued to expand on. But now we're able to do entire countries. So we're working in about 10 countries.
So tell me what that means
Chile. So I serve my mission in Chile. So Family Search gave us the record collections they have for Chile. Mm-hmm. It's about 40 million records. We kind of curated it down to the very best ones. It was about 12 million records. Mm-hmm. And we were looking for records that had multiple people. Mm-hmm. And then we ask, okay, here's a record with six people. It's a marriage record. Are any of these people already on the tree? If so, then we can set it up as a record hint. And a record hint is getting a little technical, but in Family Search, there's this thing called Source Linker. Yeah. And you see the record on the left and the tree on the right, and you have to decide if they belong to each other.
Right. And I get emails. Yeah. Like, oh, here's a hint.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So those hints that you get in the emails. And so then what we look for is records where somebody's on the tree or a couple people are on the tree, but the others are not. And so as you do that record hint, you actually add new people to the tree.
So is this happening automated or?
So that part is actually done by volunteers.
Okay.
But then we also sometimes will find a case where all six members of the family, nobody's on the tree. And so then we'll put that entire family on the tree and attach the record. And then once that family's on the tree, other record hints start to show up. And so then volunteers start to expand them out. So one of the first we did was for African Americans. And this has been great because when I travel, I always try to help people find their family.
Yeah.
And it used to be that it just didn't work for African Americans. And now almost every time I can find their grandpa.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And you really just ask three questions. You say, what's your grandpa's name? How long ago did he die? Where did he, did he die here in Utah or somewhere else? And with those three questions, usually within a minute, you can find someone's grandpa.
Wow.
And then that in that moment, they'll feel the spirit of Elijah. Yeah. And that's pretty special.
That's amazing.
So that's kind of what we're trying to do. So it's a mix of automation, but it's also like using some of the powerful software that God's allowing to be developed to make family history just a little bit more better matched to the skill level of the person doing the work.
Yeah. Like I don't have a ton of time.
Yeah.
And I'm okay on, you know, with the computer, but I'm not like I'm not you. So, but it's easy for me.
Yeah.
Like it's been set up so that it's easy for me. Yeah, for I can sure. do all sorts of stuff. Yeah, and if I sure. want to, like if I'm traveling somewhere and I want to see where are my ancestors, it's not hard to map Absolutely. Where they all are.
Yeah.
And I love everywhere we travel, we're like, okay, let's do map my ancestors okay. and see who's cool. around us and yeah. so on. And I found a couple little funny little glitches in that, but, but it's just become so easy. And I love that you're making it easier.
Yeah, for sure.
So how would people get involved?
So just go to if you Google Record Linking Lab, there's a okay. volunteer tab, and we've built 6 tools that people can use. PowerLinker is probably the easiest. Reverse indexing is pretty easy. There's a map app. There's a hint button.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hoping everyone this is a great time. This is coming out around the holiday season.
For sure.
What better time? Spend some time. People often have a little bit of time off or yeah. something holiday season. Sit down as a family, go to Google Record Links.
Record Linking Lab or rll.byu.edu, but okay. Record Linking Lab, yeah. Right.
rll.byu.edu.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hope that our audience will do this, yeah. catch the spirit of Elijah and get going. Read these sections that should
that's right.
give you the spirit of Elijah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's cool. Good. Well, are we okay going to 138?
Yeah,
let's detour really quick to 128. I think 128 is important because it lets us know that ordinances are important.
Yeah.
Okay. And then it says that we without them cannot be perfected and they without us. So yes. I think when we start to talk about a God that's very inclusive, sometimes that message can be then obviously he's just going to save everyone. But I think actually one of the unique things we know is that, you know, Jesus was exactly right. He said, you know, we can't be saved about being born again.
Yeah.
And you do need to be baptized. And so that's the interesting thing is, you know, why did God create a plan in which it was going to be necessary for us to do so many vicarious ordinances? And I think it was, he knew that, you know, as we are saviors on Mount Zion, we actually become the kind of people he wants us
yes.
to be. So I actually think he built a plan that made it so that it was absolutely necessary for us to spend a lot of time
yeah.
in the temple.
Yeah, there are a couple, I agree 100%, a couple elements. Like everyone really does need to have an ordinance, a power from God yeah. that changes who they are,
yeah.
right? And at the same time, we all need that process of
yeah.
helping others
yeah.
come to that ordinance because that helps us develop the desires
yeah.
that Christ has
yeah.
and that God has. So I would agree. That's fantastic.
And then I think we, as a church, we just need to get better at explaining to our friends why ordinances are necessary. And why we do this work in the temple. And I think Terrell Givens his is the best that I've ever heard. And his was in a hostile environment where he's on a radio show in Baltimore. The host is Jewish. Mm. And she literally just says to him, and this was when it was, the church was under a little bit of heat about doing ordinances for Holocaust individuals.
Yeah.
And she said, "Why are you trying to baptize my ancestors?" And this is, I love this quote. He says, "We believe in heavenly parents who envision a great wedding feast at the last day where the entire human family will be present. We believe the privilege has been given us of preparing the guest list. You don't have to come. We believe everyone should be invited." And so I love that's what I love about ordinances in the temple is every time I do an ordinance in the temple, I love asking this simple question. I just ask, how is this person's life different because of what I just did?
Yes.
And, you know, in 138, it uses phrases like bands, bondage, captivity. And it's really neat to actually kind of envision that while you're doing that baptismal ordinance, you're releasing people from that. And and there's a great video called Debtor's Prison. Mm. And it just shows, it depicts that when Handel would do the Messiah, they would use some of the money to release people from debtor's prison.
Oh.
And there's this neat moment in that film where they would say the name. They'd say you know, Carrie Mullenstein, and you'd see Carrie come out of the prison and be reunited with his family, or Joe Price.
Yeah.
And so I've always, like, whenever I do either family history or temp work, I'm always trying to envision that release.
Yeah. And you're right. Section 138 really does describe it. Like, they don't like this situation that they're in. It's a difficult situation. And what happens for them when that work is done is beautiful.
Yeah. Cause on the flip side, it has words like fullness of joy and rejoicing. So it's this kind of interesting contrast between bondage and liberation.
Yeah.
And the key thing in between those two is this ordinance that needs to happen.
Yes.
And so, yeah.
And what a fantastic, I mean, you think about, of all the periods of the earth to be alive,
yeah.
to be alive when you're creating things like this, where everyone can get involved in preparing names.
Yeah.
And now there are temples going up everywhere yeah. where we can take those names and do those ordinances. Yeah. I just have to picture these people and these situations that we're reading about in Section 138 that are just clapping and doing dances, and they're so excited about what we're doing to make it. So eventually, I can picture them saying, eventually they're going to get to me
yeah.
because of all of this that's going on. Eventually I get to have this. What a fantastic time to be alive.
Yeah. And that's, I think, one of the things we should focus on when we're doing family history, is to realize that there are so many people in the spirit world being taught the gospel, and they're accepting it. And so we should always, I think this is actually something President Nelson encouraged us to do, is to pray to find those that we can add to the tree who have already accepted the gospel. And so I think sometimes when you're doing family history and you're feeling like you're hitting a roadblock, like, you could obviously just work harder and try to get through the roadblock. But sometimes I just pivot and I say, like, is there another part of the tree where I can work? And I find sometimes when I pivot, I find a place where actually the work is so easy. Mm. And I always wonder if maybe it's almost like someone's prep the ground.
Yeah, so, like, hey, so we're ready over here.
We're ready over here. And yeah. so I think, like, we need to always be open to, like, letting the Holy Spirit let us know where on the tree we can go. And that's actually, like, one of the greatest gifts we can give a young adult or a youth, is to say, hey, here's your family tree. Why don't you pray and ask Heavenly Father, where on this tree should I work?
Oh, wow.
And I've been blown away at how often when they pray and go look, they find a part of the tree where there's just fruit just sitting there, like, I mean, we call them green temples, but they're just like green fruit, like yeah. ready to be all ready to go. Or they see a record hint and they do the record hint and they add four new people to the tree. And so I think that, and the neat thing I love about that is you're getting high frequency feedback from the Spirit.
Yeah.
Like, the Spirit said, go here, and you went there and it bore fruit. And so that's going to be super helpful as they go on their mission, or as they decide who to marry or what to study. Is that you've had this experience asking God a specific question, him telling you where to go, and you've seen the fruits quickly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And the joy that comes from that. There really is a deep joy.
Yeah.
It comes from two things that get combined here, from acting on the Spirit.
Yeah.
Getting a prompting and acting on it. There's a deep joy yeah. in that. And from helping someone receive what they need that they can't do, but yeah. you can do for them. Both of those have such satisfying joy in them. And when you get the two of them together, that's just wonderful.
And that's where your testimony can come from, because when you're in the temple and you feel that gratitude from the person you've just done work for, you should ask the question, like, why are they grateful?
Yeah.
I mean, I love that your podcast is called The Scriptures Are Real. Like, in that moment, I feel like the temple ordinances are real.
Yeah.
Like, what I just did really impacted someone's life.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't, like, that person wouldn't be grateful. They wouldn't care if it wasn't real.
Yeah.
And so once I know that it's real, then I know that this is God's church on the earth. It has his authority to, so actually that the work we do in the temple is efficacious on the other side.
Yeah. And that's one of the great things. I love that we are going to say the name of the person. Mm-hmm. And as all the work is done for them, their name is called several times.
Yeah, for sure.
Just in the initiatory yeah, work, it's yeah. called several times, but throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Their name is called several times. And it's almost like God is reminding us. I think it's also for them, but in a way for us, this is a real person.
This is a real person.
This yeah. is one of my children who was real, who lived on this earth, had experiences and everything else, and is waiting for you to help them mm-hmm. be saved, this real child of mine. Yeah. And that is so powerful.
And they'll always remember you. I mean, many of us that have gone to the temple a lot, we can't remember all the people that we've helped, but they like for them, that was the most important thing that could have ever happened. And so they remember us. So if you think about the young adults who are maybe feeling lonely or depressed, like there's something really empowering about saying this phrase. I say to my young adults, I'm super excited to go to heaven because I'm going to have so many friends there.
Yeah.
My lab's added 80 million people to the tree and they feel real to me. And I hope like my goal has always been that maybe by the time I die, we could add a billion or that when I go to heaven, there'll be like a billion people that I will have helped through either family history or temple work or by, you know, like doing a podcast like this with you, maybe there'll be people that listen to this and because of it, they go and they go and gather Israel and they go and imagine like, cause you know, I was someone who did nothing. And then, you know, some speaker at Education Week touched my heart. So that's what's neat about how expansive this can get.
Wonderful. Yeah. Exciting. And you're right. I mean, this is, if you're feeling lonely, this is a place to go.
For sure.
In fact, I've had people who've talked to me and said they're in their 30s, they're not married, they have a job where they're at home and you know, just kind of isolated and starting to feel lonely and detached from the world. Yeah. And I feel like I've suggested go work in the temple or go immerse yourself in family history work because the connections are real.
Yeah.
And you may not see them here, but you get lost in doing something for others. And it's hard to feel lonely when you're lost in doing something for other people.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. My daughter always jokes. She's like, Dad, most of your friends are dead. it is true. I mean, Boyd K. Packer said we can love a billion people. And I think we start by loving, you know, those around us and then it expands out.
So we're similar that way. I also work with dead people, but in a different way. Than
yeah,
you,
in a different way. Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe let's get into 138. Okay. I think the things that preceded this revelation is really important. Mm-hmm. I mean, we basically had a prophet that was like kind of already in the spirit world. It seems like he's kind of moving in and out of the spirit world.
Yeah. He's had so much mourning and so much thought about this. Yeah.
And the world's going through like one of the worst experiences ever.
Yeah.
You know, 20 million people dying in World War I, 100 million people dying in the pandemic.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just and the pandemic is personally touched his own family.
Yes.
Along with other tragedies. And as you read the accounts of like a prophet with a broken heart.
Yeah.
And so you have then a prophet and the amazing thing is he's only going to be on the earth for a couple more weeks. And he, you know, he writes down this revelation that he has. I don't know. I just, as I read over 138 again, kind of in preparation for this podcast, there was just so many verses. Like I kept hitting verses where I was like, that is just like a nugget of truth.
Yeah.
So here you have a prophet about to leave the earth. Is leaving behind a section just full of nuggets. And
yeah.
I mean, one thing I did want to mention is the pandemic in 1918 was so horrible.
Yeah. And for my audience that doesn't know, there's this influenza or flu pandemic that is sweeping the earth. Yeah. And it's hit Utah to the point where they closed the University of Utah and turned its classrooms into hospital rooms so that all the people with flu can have a place to lay on the floor and have someone try and take care of them.
Yeah.
It's massive. It's absolutely massive in its reach.
And from a history perspective, it's interesting that it was so horrible that no one wanted to remember it.
Yeah.
It was like the thing that doesn't get talked about, doesn't show up in, you know, books or movies or anything. It's just like, it was so horrible. And then the world gets hit with another one of these. And all of a sudden there's kind of a renewed interest in 1918.
Yeah.
And so one of the things we did as a lab is we taught a machine to look for the word pneumonia or influenza in death certificates.
Oh.
So we did this in about 10 states. And it was really interesting actually to find everyone in Utah who died in the pandemic as well as some other states. So if people are curious, they can go look. If you Google like 1918 pandemic BYU, there's a website where people can look up. And right now we're also doing this for the soldiers, the U.S. soldiers who died in World War I as well, which actually most of them did not have children. And so many of them had actually been overlooked on the tree because they didn't really have any, they didn't have any descendants kind of looking for them.
Yeah. They have to be someone's uncle to get their work done because you're right. They were very young.
They're very young. Yeah. And so if you think about like Wilford Woodruff's experience where the founding fathers came to him and said, how come you haven't done our temple work?
Yeah.
I've kind of felt the same way about these heroes.
Yeah.
They were kind of, they did a great service.
Yeah.
And they were largely overlooked.
And who's coming and saying, who's going to help us?
Who's going to help us? We've been trying to get all of them on the family tree too. So, but I guess like with all these projects, what you're doing is you're looking for groups that might've been overlooked. And as we, because they were overlooked, they're sitting there in that spiritual world, maybe already having accepted the gospel, but having no way to receive the ordinances.
All right.
But I love the, like some of the words that, you know, that President Smith uses, he's talking about pondering, reflecting. Mm. And it's interesting that he's reflecting on the atonement and how that's going to kind of open, his eyes for this opportunity. Let me just hit on a couple verses in here that I just don't want to miss. So verse 30, he says, "But behold, from among the righteous, he organized his forces and appointed messengers,
yeah,
clothed with power and authority, and commissioned them to go forth and carry the light of the gospel to them that were in darkness, even to all the spirits of the men." So I love those phrases, appointed, clothed,
yeah,
commissioned. These are like powerful missionaries. Yeah.
That clothed with power and authority, yeah, that really means something. And maybe I can just share something personal right now. But so I'm a temple worker at Saratoga Springs Temple, but we're about to work on the Linden Temple. So not last night, but the night before, I went and met with the temple president and was set apart to be a worker in the Linden Temple. So it's not very often you get this, but I'm actually set apart to be a temple worker in two temples right now, okay. One of them not functioning yet. But it was to listen to him, and they were doing so many people that all they did was the setting apart. No blessing after, just the bare minimum words that it took to give someone the authority to officiate in those ordinances. And actually having it be just that made me think more about the ordinances than about the stuff and the blessing that's about me, right? And I stopped and thought that it's absolutely crucial that we are clothed with God's power and authority for these people to have these ordinances done. And that's exactly what's happening. They're clothed on both sides of the veil. Yeah. We have to have God's authority, mm-hmm, or it doesn't work, yeah, for these people. But God is giving it so liberally. And that's part of what I was thinking of. I was looking at like in the line I was in, and there were going to be 100 people that night, mm-hmm, that were given authority. God is giving it so liberally because he wants to give eternal life so liberally.
Yeah.
It's an amazing time to be alive.
For sure. Yeah. And it's been neat to think about, because you're talking about, you know, these people in the spirit world that are clothed with authority, and yeah, there's people here on earth that are clothed in authority. And I think, you know, obviously we're talking about family history and temple work, but like missionary work is also part of this.
And yes.
One of the things I've thought a lot about that Sister Nelson talked about is that when a missionary is teaching a family, that there are often a bunch of angels in the room. Mm. And I think, like, as I've talked to my own kids, as they've served mission, is to help them try to realize that they are being assisted by lots of angels.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And to ask like, why are those angels so invested in that particular friend that they're teaching? And to think of every person on earth that we bring into the church as being the kind of starting link of a chain of temple ordinances that could be extended to their, all these people that have been waiting. That's what I love about, Elder Bednar talks about one work. So I really believe that, you know, for us to get all this, all these ordinances done, we're going to need to have more people helping us. We're going to need to have more temples.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the gathering involves the gathering of records, but it also involves the gathering of those that can come serve in the temple, the gathering of people who, yeah, can, you know, bring their ancestors' records into the tree. Yeah. And it's pretty exciting to be part of that.
It is.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And then similar to that, actually President Oakes has said, the ministering of angels is one manifestation of the spirit, but the ministering of angels can also be unseen. Angelic messages can be delivered by a voice or merely by thoughts or feelings communicated to the mind. Mm. And so, you know, when Nephi says, angels speak by the power of the Holy Ghost, wherefore they speak the words of Christ. It's always made me wonder, like, when people feel the Spirit, feel the Holy Ghost, one manifestation of that is the Spirit of Elisha. So I wonder how often that Spirit we feel is coming through these, what President Oakes calls, you know, angelic messages.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
I mean, another verse that really has impacted me a lot is verse 57. And it says, I beheld that the faithful elders of this dispensation, when they depart from mortal life, continue their labors in the preaching of the gospel in the great world of the spirits of the dead. So this verse is really important to me because we had a tragedy in Springville. We had one of our, one of our local families, their son was serving a mission in Denton, Texas, and died in a car accident. So this was Luke Carter, and he was with Eli Fowler. So it was just like his funeral was so powerful. Like it felt like the entire high school was there. And it was one of those tragedies where you can't quite figure out why.
Yeah.
And so we ended up doing a family history project in memory of Elder Carter and Elder Fowler. And it was really neat because the youth in Springville worked with the youth in Denton, Texas, and they grew the tree for Denton. And lots of miracles came out of this, but at the fireside, I was trying to think of like what scripture to share. And this thought came into my head. It said, look in DNC 138. And so I looked in DNC 138, and that's the verse that I read, that when the faithful elders of this dispensation, when they depart from mortal life, continue their labors in preaching the gospel. And so it just became really, this scripture became very real to me because I could see it. I could like, and what was really neat is that after the passing of Elder Carter and Elder Fowler, there were so many miracles that happened in Denton. And it did really feel like they were continuing their work in a different way. And so, I mean, that's one of the neat things about the gospel. Like we should always be sad when someone passes, especially in a tragic, unexpected way. Like there's always going to be sorrow.
Yeah.
But it's really neat that God takes any tragedy and he can, you know, bring good, you know, beauty from ashes kind of situation. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Bitterness can always have sweetness in it.
For sure. Well. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the come follow me lesson for these sections is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the conference talks that it refers to are amazing. And I love that President Oaks is actually one of the key people that has spoken about the spirit world.
Yeah.
And has done such a great job. So if you read that article that's linked in come follow me, he basically says like, this is what we know.
Yeah.
He says there's a lot of things we don't know, but these are some things we know. And actually one of them, he kind of refers back to the prophet Joseph Smith, and he says, prophet Joseph Smith gave two teachings near the close of his ministry that have been frequently taught by his successors. And one is that family members who are righteous will be together in the world of spirits. Mm-hmm. So I actually think that's like one of the most powerful messages of our church.
Yes.
Is when a friend has their parents die, to know that they will be together again.
That's as comforting a thing as exists in the
world. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's interesting to have other people of other faiths try to explain how it works for them. And they'll say something like, oh, my father's going to live in my heart forever. Yeah. Or, you know, but we actually believe in a physical reunification, like a real. And then the other he says is that those in the world of the spirits, they're not far from us. They know and understand our thoughts, feelings, and emotions, and are often pained therewith. So, but also pained therewith, but also joyful. They rejoice in the things that are happening.
Yes.
So I think one thing I'd probably encourage listeners, like here'd be one super motivation for doing family history, is anytime you add someone to the family tree, they are so close to having their temple work done. With the new technologies like Ordinance Ready, like all they need is they need like a third cousin to hit the Ordinance Ready button.
Yeah.
And so if I were trying to, like if I had my child going on a mission, let's say they're going to Kennewick, Washington. One thing I might do as a parent or as a ward or as a leader working with the youth, I might grow the tree for Kennewick, Washington, knowing that every time I put someone on the tree for Kennewick, Washington, that person, all they need is just a cousin to join the church. And I wouldn't be surprised if they start to go and prep the way. And I wouldn't be surprised that in the future, as our missionaries come and meet with people, that they're surprised at how prepared they are for the gospel.
So intertwined. All of the work that we do for them, they do for us. It's so intertwined.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. As you're talking, I just have to, this is the verse that so often has come to my mind as you've been speaking with me, and it's almost at the end, but it's verse 58. The dead who repent will be redeemed through obedience to the ordinances of the house of God.
Yeah.
But of course that can only happen. That's a partnership we have to do with them. It can only happen if we help them with it.
For sure.
And that's the beauty of the work you're doing.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. So this has been great to be with you, Carrie. I was trying to think of like what, what to end on. I mean, there's so many, there's just so many exciting things. Like, I think we need to emphasize that so many people are receiving the gospel in the world of spirits. So this is something that President Nelson taught at Roots Tech. He, his grandfather actually received a visit from his father. So this is in 1891. His grandfather received a visit from his father, and his the father said, "You cannot imagine, my son, how many spirits there are in the spirit world who have not yet received the gospel. But many are receiving it, and a great work is being accomplished. Many are anxiously looking forth to their friends who are still living to administer for them in the temple." And then the other thing I love is how President Irene talks about these marvelous inventions. And in fact, in verse 53 and 54, it talks about these choice spirits who are reserved to come forth in the fullness of the times to take part in the laying the foundation of the great Latter-day work, including the building of temples and the performance of ordinances therein for the redemption of the dead who also are in the spirit world. And so President Irene talks about, he says, "We do not know what marvels God will inspire people to create to help in his work of gathering the family. But whatever marvelous inventions may come, their use will require the spirit working in people like you and me." So you and I get to work at BYU, and there's some incredible things happening among our students. They're so creative and so open to the spirit.
So dedicated.
And I see like the spirit working on other people who are creating new ways to extract text from records, or new ways to link records together, or even just like internet technology that makes it possible for someone in Vanuatu to use the internet and access Family Search. And then I think we're also going to see technological advances in the building of temples. So I was in Vanuatu when the temple showed up. It was a modular temple. And so it was pre-built, and the blocks were just on this big boat. And so I was there when the crane was like lifting them off. And as a result, we could envision a future in the world in the future where we build these temples in Mexico, and they're ready to go. So that, you know, the moment we have permission to put a temple in, it's like good to go. So I guess I'm like, I'd call it a redeeming the dead optimist, which, you know, as a kid, I was like, wow, how on earth are we ever going to extend the temple ordinances to everyone that's ever lived? And I've over the last several years had a front row seat to like seeing how fast the work is accelerating. And I'm pretty excited about a world in the near future where we are able to do temple work at an unprecedented scale, where we have more people participating as temple workers and temple patrons.
They're making it easier to be a temple worker as
well. For sure. Yeah. And that's one of the neatest things. And I don't know, like, what do you think would happen if like all of our students at BYU were temple workers? Like, imagine the transformation that would do.
And a lot are actually.
And a lot are. Yeah, for sure. And that's been such a neat thing. And I also am excited about a world where everyone in the world can see how they're related to each other. I think in the very near future, when you like, you and I didn't do it, but in the future, when we meet, I'd be like, "Hey, Carrie, let's bump our phones." Oh yeah. Carrie, you and I are, fourth cousins.
It's amazing. And the ways they're creating for you to work at the temple, this is one thing that the temple president was just sharing with me that he wanted shared, so I might as well do it here. But they've created a shift. I'm going to work the 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. shift.
That's incredible.
They've created just for people who are working, but want to work in the temple.
That would be
so incredible. They're creating shifts so that people who normally would have thought they can't be temple workers can. But they also have shifts. They're saying, okay, you may not be an ordinance worker because maybe being around that many people is difficult for you, but we've got things with like security or grounds or maintenance or laundry and things like that, where you are every bit as much. You're set apart as a temple worker. You're every bit as much of a temple worker because you are making it possible for these ordinances to happen. And they want people to know about those opportunities. I mean, there are just so many ways to get involved these days.
That's going to be incredible.
Yeah. Remind us again. So it's rll.byu.edu, but if they were going to Google search.
Record Linking Lab.
Record Linking Lab, BYU, and people can find us. So here's what we want for our audience. I don't usually give a homework assignment, but we're giving a homework assignment. This is what I would love for everyone listening to do. To go to rll.byu.edu, a Record Linking Lab at BYU, if you're just searching on Google, go there, figure out something you can do, find someone else and share with them so they can do it, and then get online and share with us something that you've done, something that you've learned, something that happened. So those three things. You go there, do something yourself, help someone else do it, and then share with us online what you've been doing. I think this will be an incredible experience. The spirit of Elijah is going like crazy, and we want to see it even more. So I hope that our audience will get involved with this. We want to thank those who make this possible. Just anyone who's listening and liking and downloading and rating and reviewing, especially our Patreon folks. You really make it possible for us to keep this going. And today we want to thank the Van Blerkums who have donated to make this possible. And we want to thank you, Dr. Joseph Price, for all that you're doing and for spending some time with us today.
Thanks, Carrie. This was great.